Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Nebojsa Nakichenovic from the Vienna University of Technology and IASA, the International Institute for Applied Systems Analysis in Vienna. Nebojsa and I met at the Global Economic Symposiums meeting in Schleswig-Holstein, Germany, in September 2008, where he had spoken at a panel session on energy versus climate change. I began by asking him to outline the challenges the world faces in the potential trade-off between these two areas.
Let me just start on the climate side and then talk about economics. On the climate side, if we are going to stabilize the future climate change at about 2 degrees Celsius additional global average mean warming above the pre-industrial level, if we are going to do that, we have to basically reduce the emissions by 50% global greenhouse gas emissions, including carbon dioxide, by about 50% by 2030 and maybe up to 80% by the middle of the century, going down beyond that, perhaps even becoming negative. So it's an enormous challenge for our society from one side. This is why many believe that the economic impacts of that will be quite severe. Number one is we should not forget that doing nothing will have also severe economic impacts because our energy system is not sustainable. And it's not only climate that we are worrying about. We are worrying about security. We are worrying about people who are deprived, who do not have access to energy services at all. It's about a third of the global population. And so on and so forth. There are health impacts. There are risks of energy systems. So if you think from that point of view, one can say that this challenge, even though it's huge, it could be an opportunity because there are many possibilities of win-win strategies that I think will further economic growth and at the same time help resolve many of these problems I talked about, from access all the way to security, while reducing the emissions of greenhouse gases. So I think this is another possible way of looking at it.
So I think there's general agreement that we need to do something about the threat of climate change. We need to do something to reduce emissions. What are the solutions that we want to reach for in terms of reducing our reliance on oil and coal and perhaps seeking opportunities in renewable energy, other sources? Where the key solutions lie in your mind?
Well, I think the key solutions can be divided in few categories, even though in detail it's more complex. But in the broad categories, I think number one solution, because it's also good for all of the other things I've mentioned before, is improvement of efficiency. I mean, a literal way of saying is that for every barrel of oil that we extract out of the ground, we are using only a few percent of it really effectively. The rest is lost either as waste heat or in conversion processes. Now, studies show, and I think this is very important, studies show that much of this energy efficiency improvement would be beneficial. In other words, even economically. It would, you know, some people figuratively say negative costs. Basically, by saving energy, you're also saving money. Now, the problem is that I think transaction costs are high, there is a lack of information, and I think the biggest barrier to efficiency improvement is the fact that many of our decisions are relatively short-term, and energy efficiency often has a longer-term payback. So we have to expand our time horizon. So that's one category. Efficiency, I think that would be good in any case. Then we have a broad portfolio of renewable technologies that can all reduce reliance on carbon and therefore reduce the carbon dioxide emissions. So they are a big part of the solution. The problem there is that renewables are generally much costlier today. So people are shifted to them only to a limited degree, and they will be associated with some additional costs in forms of subsidies, feed-in tariffs, and it's quite clear that we cannot do that ad infinitum. We cannot subsidize the whole energy system. I don't think it's even good, personally. And so to increase the share of renewables, it is essential to improve the technology in order to achieve higher deployment. That means, in other words, costs have to go down. The third category is the nuclear energy, and I think everybody's familiar with many problems from issues of proliferation, security, nuclear weapons, and storage of waste materials and so on. But again, I think if one puts an economist hat on, really the biggest problem right now is also high cost. So from that point of view, there is a certain symmetry to renewables. A new nuclear power plant is quite costly. And it is very difficult to compete, and you know, you have to plan your capital expenditures over 10 years before it even goes into production. So it's a serious problem. And the third, the fourth category is what one calls carbon capture and storage. Basically, the idea is, since we depend on fossil energy, 80% of global energy is fossil, is to remove carbon from coal, remove carbon from oil and from gas, and thereby make fossils carbon-free, not associated with the emissions. Here, we need a value of carbon. This will simply not happen for other reasons, because it's always additional cost. A coal power plant with carbon capture and storage will be always more expensive than the coal power plant without it. Today, roughly 50% in terms of kilowatt hour of produced electricity would be about 50% more expensive as a broad order of magnitude. So there we need the value of carbon. Otherwise, there is no incentive to do this. But like with renewables, efficiency, and nuclear, we also need clear regulatory mechanisms. It's very difficult for private sector, even if they would say, if there is a heroic entrepreneur and says, I love to try to experiment with this, even if it costs me more, there are many risks, you know. What if there are accidents, and who is going to worry about the stored carbon in the long run? So you see that the institutional and economic issues here go hand in hand.
Well, I was going to say, what are the barriers to getting to the kind of the place we want to be? I mean, you're favouring a broad portfolio of activities to pursue this. But what's stopping us? What's holding us back? What do you think are the key obstructions?
Well, I really think it's at the institutional level, the major barrier. I think that the decision makers in the private sector, I mean, one can say, get confusing signals. And I think it's very difficult for many of them to realize the economic benefit, and there has to be economic benefit. If this is not profitable, people will not do it. You know, we cannot turn the energy system around through subsidies alone. Maybe subsidies at the beginning with the sunset clause, but eventually it has to be profitable. And for that, I think we need some regulatory mechanisms. I don't have a solution personally either, to be honest. But I would say it has to be seen in the nexus of extending the planning period for the private sector, so that it is in economic interest for the private sector to look at the benefits that might incur down 3 or 4 years down the line. That means we have to have much better way of raising capital and sustaining longer-term projects. All of these things that I talked about are capital-intensive, so that would be a fundamental change. We would have to basically, as an order of magnitude, double the investment in the energy system. And with today's need to have very high returns on capital with a very short period of time is a barrier. That's one. The next barrier is, for many of these technologies, we need the value of carbon, and economically it needs to be universal. It's not enough if Germany or UK have a value of carbon. Also US, China, and India have to join the club. It has to be global. And otherwise, there is a leakage problem, there is a problem of competitiveness. So that's the next thing, is we need some international arrangements. I would also say that carbon tax or tradable permits should be revenue neutral. They shouldn't help only finance ministers. They should come back to the entrepreneurs and to consumers if it's not going to be a drag on the economy. So you see, this is a big bottleneck, because it does really require changing probably the pricing mechanisms and even the tax structure of our system. So that's very difficult to do. And then I would say the third category is at the level of transaction costs, or what some people, also the other aspect, it's sometimes called principal agent problem, is that people who own the capital, like houses or power plants, are not necessarily the people who pay the energy bill and who will be paying the carbon bill if it's introduced. So somehow we have to integrate that.
Final question. What do you see as the key issues on the research agenda going forward? Both the sort of technology questions of whether what technologies we need to develop, but also these social science issues that we've been grappling with this morning around the economics and politics and the whole governance issues.
Yeah, I think, you know, all of these things are complex. At the research level, we definitely have to fundamentally increase the public R&D efforts in the energy area, because they've been generally declining. There was a small trend reversal over the last few years, but it's not good enough for even coming back to the level that we had in the 80s. You know, after the oil crisis of 73, R&D efforts expanded enormously, and then as the energy prices fell, The R&D efforts also fell, both in the private and the public sector. I think that needs to be reversed. Energy area has to keep up with the R&D efforts in other areas, like, you know, biomedical sciences, information communication technologies. It has to keep up, so that needs to be increased very, very highly. But that's not enough. I mean, that's a kind of a priming of the pump, basically. At the end of the day, again, I would argue that much of the deployment, or almost all of it, will have to occur in the private sector. That cannot occur only with the public funds. Public funds can help with infrastructures, with our basic R&D. And so that also in the private sector, there has to be incentives for increasing the R&D. So that's one set. That's on the technology side. But you mentioned the more socioeconomic and lifestyle, human behavior aspects. I think those are the most difficult to tackle. Because the entrepreneurs, once they're faced with the clear regulatory mechanisms and incentive structures, will turn around very quickly. I sincerely believe in that. But we as consumers have certain practices that are very difficult to change. Most of us don't even look at the economics, so we have bounded rationality in our behavior, if one wants to be polite. And so there, lots of work needs to be done. And I think that's most difficult because many of these things will not happen with some changes in lifestyles. I think we should not have an illusion that, you know, energy system and our economy will undergo a grand transition over the next 50 years and we will do everything the same as we used to. It was also not the case in the history. Going from coal to oil economy meant real changes. How we work, how we live, and how we commute, how we communicate, and so on. So that is ahead of us. And frankly, I think we understand that part of the problem the least, but it may be the biggest part of the equation.
One of the big topics for next year is Global Economic Symposium, then, perhaps.
I hope so.
Voyager Nakushenovich, many thanks.
Thank you.